Welcome to the Fifth Trooper Podcast.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Fifth Trooper Network Podcast episode, special extravaganza, or whatever the hell we're going to call this, because it's special. And we have a bunch of special guys on. You guys are real special. We have myself. I'm Jay Shalansky. You guys know me. And then we have Zach from the Fifth Trooper Network.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
And Babyface Mike from the Fifth Trooper Network.
Somehow I made it back.
And also our very special guest. Even though he's appearing everywhere this week, we decided we'd get him too, because why not? LJ Pena.
Glad to be back, Jay. Thank you for the wonderful introduction, as per usual.
Yeah, man. So basically, the thought of this special edition episode is all four of us were clearly at LVO in one capacity or another. And I thought it'd be cool to kind of do a recap, lessons learned, just kind of fill in some of the gaps that some of the people that can't make it out to these large events can kind of listen to our conversations, from a bunch of different viewpoints, right? You have Mike and I and Zach actually played as well. From the player viewpoint, we have the TO viewpoint. And we have a judge viewpoint. So I think there's going to be enough kind of angles here to cover the whole of LVO. So to begin with, LJ, I'm going to start with you. Give us the lowdown. Like, give us the 10,000-mile view. How did it go for you?
From the TO perspective, I was obviously very happy and talked about this many times on the day with, you know, the attendance, of course, having basically triple the amount of seats filled as last year is great from an event growth standpoint. But there was also a lot of stuff that, you know, happened behind the scenes that improved between us and Frontline Gaming that I, you know, would be remiss if I didn't give them a bit of a shout out, because they definitely made some pre and post event things smoother, which I know was a little harder on myself and Brendan last year when we were running this for the first time. And so overall, just from the data I've collected from people, from, you know, being there and just, you know, getting to enjoy myself and watch the product unfold, we feel great. We set out to accomplish a mission, which was to grow the event that we did last year and maintain a similar, if not better, quality in terms of, you know, tables and the overall product and the prizes and everything went into it. And I feel for the most part we did meet those goals. And so I've got a little bit of data brought from the people that were there that filled out, you know, our survey to kind of bring you the player side of that as well. But from the top level, we feel pretty good. And we were glad that so many people were able to hang out with us.
Yeah, so from a TO perspective on a big event like this, how is it working with FFG? I think there's a lot we talk about from our perspective, or the Scoundrels talk about from their perspective, about primes and RPQs and how those go, and, you know, working with the store. But I think from a TO perspective, this is a unique opportunity where we as a community, the TO gets to work directly with FFG. So how has that process been from last year's LVO to this year's LVO?
As far as FFG is concerned, they still actually are very minimally invasive on our process. They actually treat Frontline Gaming, who puts on the convention, very closely to the same way that they, I believe, would treat a store. Essentially, Frontline Gaming acts as the brick and mortar store, and they give them the kit, give them the guidelines, and then Frontline Gaming gives that stuff to me, and I'm kind of a quote-unquote contractor that then takes the event out of their hands. So FFG will put down the guidelines, you know, they'll tell us, hey, this is what we can do for you. If I do reach out to, like, let's say Matt Holland, and I talk to him and I say, hey, this is what we're looking at. I did attempt to unsuccessfully grow the number of tickets that we, you know, were trying to give away this year, as far as invites were concerned. And so there is some like top interactions there that I try to work with them to meld to our event. And in some avenues, it's successful and it helps the event grow. And then sometimes there's other stuff we don't quite meet, but we try to tuck away for next time. So like a good example is, you know, the prize support. We got one kit for what was essentially two events, and Matt was able to bring us more Bossk and Sabine cards. So the top 64, which is, you know, everybody could get at least that prize each day. And, you know, we would be covered, you know, in certain other areas. And we could maybe look into next year, even though we would probably be a grand champ again, I assume, you know, being able to give out more invites in scale with the size of event we are. So there's a lot of that, what I call strategic level stuff that goes on behind the scenes that I talk with them very early on. And then we kind of work with those projections throughout the months leading up to the event to make sure that everybody is taken care of. And for the most part, they're always very willing to work with me. And, you know, we have a lot of good conversations. So there's a lot of crosstalk there that I think is very positive that the community doesn't see. And, you know, I do kind of hand it to OP for being so involved, because they're usually, you know, pretty readily available to work on, you know, making the events work for the players, not just making it easy for me.
Yeah. And I would agree. I think that they do a great job. You know, I think we spend a lot of time sometimes in some of these media outlets talking about the negatives. And I think there's a lot of positives in this being one of them that FFG brings to the table. So switching gears a little bit, Zach, you were a judge, and a GM there for the narrative, and a judge for the Friday heat. How was that for you? How was judging at a major event for you?
So it's funny. You sit there and you think about judging and you think maybe it's not that great because you just got to kind of walk around and keep an eye on things. And a lot of the questions you get are for cover or, you know, simple things that people just want reassurance on. But I actually loved the judging aspect of it. Not only was it like interesting in the fact that like you got some weird calls that sometimes you're like, you knew off the top of your head, but you kind of challenge yourself on what you know with the game. And the best thing you can do for yourself, and I put this in my blog post, is that like, you're a human being, you're going to get something wrong eventually as a judge. And you need to make sure that like, you don't panic. Like I know I gave a ruling on something. And I was like, you know what? Hold on a minute. Let me relook that up. And I went back. I was like, wait a minute, I'm wrong. Let's do this. And that's the key, I think, to judging, is that you need to make sure that if you're not 100%, that you look it up in that rules reference guide. And that's why it's there. It's an online PDF. You can go to it at any point. And I actually meant to print it. I didn't, but going to my phone was just as fine. It was actually a lot of fun because I got to walk around and, you know, talk to the people that I know and talk to people I didn't know when they were done their games, even though I was trying to keep an eye on stuff. You know, as the day went on is when I started to like really like hone in on certain games. Like, you know, when it's the first round, you know, everyone's kind of like getting their gears in together and it's going a little bit slower. Then the pace picks up and questions start coming in and coming in and coming in. By the time it's the 3-0s playing, it's when you really got to zone in. And that's no offense to everyone that's playing a game that, you know, quote unquote, doesn't really count. But when it's 3-0s playing against each other, trying to make it to the top cut for the next day, you got to really hone in on those games. And it was really interesting to see how, like, as the day progressed, how more involved you get as a judge. So it was really fantastic. As far as the GM for the narrative, man, that was a lot of fun. Not to toot your own horn, Jay, but that event deck is a lot of fun. And it was really interesting on the cards that you can just throw down on people and really, you know, mix things up. I hope that everyone that played, you know, enjoyed themselves.
Yeah, some of the feedback we got a little bit was, and I blame you guys, the GMs, was that there were some Rebel players that were like, oh, some of the cards were really strong and it really favored the Empire players. And I was like, I blame the GMs. I don't, like, they did that. I didn't do that.
It was really hard to try and balance, because not balance, but it's, you kind of had to like pay attention to your pod and try and pay attention to like the games that were going on, and try and figure out a way that wouldn't break the game per se. I had a game where like a Vader was all by himself and I was going to play like the airstrike card, we'll call it, right? And then I was like, wait a minute, Vader's on like 6 wounds. If this airstrike gets pointed at him, guess what? Vader's going to die to this airstrike. So I like picked it up. I'm like, oh no, we don't want to play that because that's just going to ruin the game. But so it was really like the ebbs and flows trying to figure it out. But yeah, it's kind of hard to like, keep everything balanced. You know, it's hard to say that to a player because they want to play a, you know, try and play an even keeled game, but it's the narrative event. Stuff's going to happen. You know, terrain's going to blow up and things that you thought were safe aren't going to be safe anymore.
Yeah. And so speaking of, you know, Zach brought up the event deck and the narrative. So LJ, we kind of teamed up a little bit and you were gracious enough to let us use our event deck, kind of our first test run of the event deck at LVO. How did from when you first thought about the narrative and then watching it actually in, you know, be played and throughout the day, how did that turn out for you in your mind? Was it everything you wanted it to be? Were there some lessons learned there?
It definitely met the end state that I was looking for. I mean, it provided some objectives that the players had never seen before. It threw a lot of curveballs. And then honestly, there was a bit of good old-fashioned improvising that goes along with a good narrative event, in my opinion. And knowing that I would have Ryan Swoski and I would have Zach here available to be that kind of roving GM was something that I had kind of worked on after I saw the deck, and like it came to light kind of in those last couple weeks before the event started. And so there was a lot of stuff that I was prepared to do and maybe didn't execute because I saw what we were working with as we got closer to it and new ideas kind of came to mind. And so we didn't have a lot that was set in stone for the event. I kind of wanted to see how all of the tables were laid out. I wanted to see all these battle cards. I wanted to see all these condition cards. I wanted to talk to the Armada TO because I had my box of shipped scatter terrain that I was walking around with ready to drop on people. And so there's things like that that, you know, you build your options, you give yourself a hand of things that you can do, and you try to make it all work and make sense to the players. You know, you take a step back, you go, okay, what does this actually look like when I look at the entire event? And is it going to make a fun and interesting experience for the people that are actually playing it, the people that paid to play? And I mean, I think overall it accomplished that goal. And the event deck was a huge part of that success because it gave me a lot of flexibility to do fun things. There were so many interesting cards in there. And then after the first round, when the GMs had all gotten a little taste of playing the event deck, when the second round came around, we were like, okay, now we've seen these cards in action. How can we really use them to their full effect to screw with the players? Which was the best part.
So much fun.
And I will tell you that Sunday, after doing this for 2 days, you know, 14, 15, 16 hour days straight, having that event deck at the end of those 3 days was so satisfying because it's like, hey, I remember how much you were a pain in the butt during your qualifier heat on Friday. Have fun with this card. You guys have a good time. Not that I was actually vengeful against anybody, but you know, when there was opportunities that I may have taken because I had friends on the table and could maybe, you know, mess with them a little bit. It was very cathartic for me because that's, you know, satisfying to see.
Well, and that was kind of like the read. Unfortunately, you know, we were doing stream and everything and playing on Friday, but you know, that was kind of the read I got from a lot of people for the narrative events. And, you know, anyone listening that's going to TO or has a store that they want to TO stuff at, I think the narrative events is a really nice place where you can combine the competitive atmosphere with the more relaxed hobby atmosphere and kind of get a place where both those kind of souls can meet. Because it's competitive still, because it's still a game, and I think you can like give away prizes and stuff for the narrative winners, or you know, I put that in air quotes. But then I think with the event deck or anything that you come up with for the narrative is going to really bring in some of the other people that are just looking to have fun and have a good time. And really, I think walking away from that, most of the players that I had spoke with that played in the narrative were very excited. You know, they were coming up like telling me stories. Like one guy was like, oh my god, Order 66 came out and my gin was sitting in front of my FD cannon and it just lit her up. And so, you know, I think there was a lot of cool like interactions there that people got to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, when you have Decaf and Kodak, you know, members of the Discord that I'm really good friends with.
Oh, man.
And I just decided.
Oh, that game was so good.
It was so good. I decide to drop Order 66 before the game starts. And I said, when you deploy your units after you're ready to flip command cards, play this card. So they flip over Order 66 and they just kind of look at me like, you've got to be kidding me. So they were like, this is ridiculous.
So Zach, tell the audience what Order 66 does.
Is you know, kind of cut and dry by the name of it. You put it down and it says all of your units, their first action has to be to shoot a commander if able. So they were playing clones and droids, and they were playing Rex and Obi-Wan and Dooku and Grievous. So they were trying to figure out ways to kind of not take shots at their commanders, but it was just impossible. And of course, deflect, you know, would trigger if Obi-Wan spent a dodge and some weird interactions. And I think Dooku died early, and I think maybe Rex or Obi-Wan died early. But the game got really spicy later when Obi-Wan had, I think, two dodges on him, and he was in melee with like three B1 droids. But this one lone B1 decided to walk into melee and punch Obi-Wan. He's one wound left and he's got two dodges. The B1 decides to roll a crit and Obi-Wan rolls a blank. and all, man, you see is Matan and Decaf with his hair just like waving around like, oh, the B1 did it. And Codex just looking down like, you got to be kidding me that Obi-Wan just died to this B1. And it was just, those moments were what made that a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. That game, oh my gosh, those guys were having so much fun down at that end table. I'd be walking around at my pod and they'd constantly be, you know, screaming and getting excited. Decaf Matan had this this, you know, new way of rolling that he was testing during the game, where he would just pick up the dice and slam them down on the table, and what face they landed on was what they landed on. And so he had there's a Rex in melee as well by the end of the game that kept hitting B1s, and the B1s kept saving. And then I think it was Kodak who did the same thing, where he then decided to pick up his dice and throw them all down, and they were also all blocks. So it was like, I bet you that's never going to happen again. And then he picks up his dice, throws them down, and it happens again. And we all just lost our minds. Man. It was great. Oh, and then I know you were walking around at a different table, but I did hijack his pod at the end of that game, and I played a card where each person gets to choose a piece of terrain that then erupts.
Such a good card.
And they were playing key positions. So they've each got like three or four unit leaders touching these key positions, and they just start exploding randomly. It was great.
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, all the player feedback, came up to us. I know a bunch of people are really excited about buying the event decks, and, you know, we're going to get to that. I think what we're going to end up doing is pre-orders for Adepticon, because there was some great feedback from the players and some of the GMs on how we could tweak a couple of the cards to make them just a little bit better. And so we're really excited about that. But talking about fun and playing, like, I do want to shift a little bit over to the competitive side, and you know, Mike, I'll bring you in on this too, is that, you know, I don't want everybody to think, like, if you haven't been out to these highly competitive events, that it's all serious, that it's all like you're focused. But at the same time, so I was in the Friday heat, and last year at LVO round one, I got paired up against Nima in round one last year, and we had this crazy hard fought battle. You know, they do dice down at LVO. So you get an extra 10 minutes and then they say dice down and that's it. And literally our game went right to dice down. And if I had rolled, there was a really, really good chance I would have won, and I would have killed a unit and won. And if I didn't roll, I lost. And so, like, you know, I think Brendan last year yelled dice down and I was like, oh, and then Nima was like, no, roll it. And I was like, no, like, they said dice down, you know, we'll just move on. So this year Nima was there again, and he and I all day long were like, we're going to get paired. I'm like, I'm going to get my revenge. And so the last game top table, it was Nima and I on stream. You guys can all see it on our LVO, but he, He beat me again, and it was a tight match again, and he is officially my nemesis now. So
Oh, my Lord. You've got to put that on, like, a T-shirt or something.
That's amazing.
Nemesis. Yeah, what I forgot the wording, but destroying the East Coast since 2019. That's
so good.
But there was kind of like this rivalry. Like, listen, Nima and I are friends, and like he's such a nice guy, and we have a good sense of humor going back and forth. So like all day we were like needling each other, and I'm like, you're not gonna be ready for these heavies, and you know, and like just like going back and forth, and it was just you know, fate or kismet or whatever you want to call it that we ended up getting paired in the final round to go into Saturday, and it was. Like, it, for anyone who saw it on stream, it was this hard-fought game. I mean, LJ, you were watching it, and Mike, you weren't. You were playing that day. But LJ, you were watching it. It was a tough game, but it never felt negative, if that makes any sense. Like, it was always, like, it was just, it felt competitive and fun. And I, even though I felt bad for losing at the end of the day, it was still, like, Nima's such a gracious winner and such a great opponent that it didn't feel negative. Yeah, no,
there's always, by the time you get to that 3-0 break point, there's always a tension. Whether you want there to be or not, there's always an underlying tension. But it is absolutely up to the players to moderate and manage that. And when the players are joking with each other, you know, when they say, hey, that was a great roll, good job, you know, when you manage that between the two, that is the difference between a good competitive game and a bad competitive game. And the reason why, you know, I know people like myself and others have poured so much into this community is that at the highest level, you know, that is the kind of relationship that top players will routinely have with each other. And I, you know, I can't say that it happens at 100% of top games, but I see it happen so much, and it is so comforting. And, you know, I'm glad that you guys got to play each other in the last round. You've played each other in the first round of a day and the last round of a day, and we will have to see what happens next time.
Yeah, and I'll say too, for anyone out there about like being afraid of judge calls or calling a judge. So Nima and I ended up calling Keegan was our judge, which he did a phenomenal job. I felt bad for him because the calls were really tough, but we called him, I think, three times. We had judge calls, and it was simple calls for us, you know, to call a judge about, but difficult for Keegan to call. But it was, you know, it was all about terrain, like, because I had the tank, and it's like, well, can I drive over this? Can I drive over that? Can the, you know, do the tons get cover from this? Can they move over that? And so even though we called the judge, there was no animosity there. And I'm just trying to get people out there in the world, like, it's okay to call judges and just be like, hey, you know what? We can't decide on this. Let's just get a judge. They'll decide. And then it's impartial.
And Zach can attest to it. He basically lived at the table for round four when I played Archiquette. We had probably a sequence of 30 straight minutes where we were calling a judge every few because we played on the Sith Temple table where there was this terrain that was just about the height of a mini, but not quite in some areas. And us trying to figure out what was a clamber or a sight line was impossible. So there's no stigma to calling over someone to make your game come and run smoothly. I mean, that's why they're there.
Yeah, and so Mike, kind of talk a little bit too throughout your day. So Mike went 4-0 on day one. How was it for you at a bigger event like this? Both competitive wise and fun wise. Like, what were your takeaways from that?
Sure. So this is my third event that's a convention that I've been to. I went to the Northeast Open for my first one, which is a nice way to get my feet wet. I went down to Nova last season. I guess Nova this year to get my ticket. And then I felt like those two are kind of warm-ups for an event like this. I went from a 40-person heat to a 32 to a 64. So there was a ton of people there, and it was kind of overwhelming at first because my table was as far as possible from the pairing center. So I had to walk all the way down there, and I was like, well, I just walked a quarter mile. I guess I should play Game of Legion. And I had Stabcast Ryan actually as my first round opponent. So it was like Battle of the Podcasts right away. And it was cool to play another high-level player. But once again, there's no tension because both of us know that we're there to actually have fun. I mean, both of us are trying to win, and we both did rather well, but you know, it's the intention there is to go out, have a good time. You're with your friends that you don't get to see very often, maybe two or three times a year, and you're there to roll some dice. So that was a lot of fun. Rounds two and three kind of followed in the same format. I played two guys that I had never met before, and it was nice just to get some early, get some early icebreakers out there. LJ had the good idea of having us write our Discord usernames as well as our real names on our name tags. So when the name tag flips around and you see someone's, you know, like their handle, and it's like, oh, you know, I've talked to you a couple of times. How are you doing? Like, it's nice to put a name to a face. And then by the time it does get into round four, even though you're playing other quote unquote personalities and big names in the community, and both of you are trying to get 4-0 to day two, it never got edgy. It was all still about, you know, making sure that we're here to have fun. It's all the way out in Las Vegas, but, you know, stay within the rules of the game and call the judge when there's a contention, but never step over that line to the point that it becomes uncomfortable or awkward for someone to get involved.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, overall from the competitive side, there were some surprises as far as meta goes and how many, you know, how many of what units showed up there. And one of the things I found really interesting, we got some of the stats early here from Bush Facts. He gave it to us early, was I don't know if you guys remember last year at LVO, but like the bid count went way down. Like, so the, you know, roughly the biggest bid counts were zero and then one. So I think there was like 25 lists that had zero bid, 21 that had one, and then it dropped considerably down to 12 for two, 10 and 10 for four, three and four, like eight for five. So, you know, I think when I was looking at the landscape, and I bring up bid count because I think bid is also indicative of where the competitive level is, not just the meta list, but also, you know, going for that blue player and trying to get a big bid. And so we saw a considerable drop in the bid, and, you know, only a few were above like six, you know, like we had like maybe six for seven and eight, and then it just kind of dropped off after that, five and two, but for nine and 10. And so what do you guys think of that? I mean, cause we saw, let me just say this too. We saw a weird mix of list archetypes, and I just don't, not just because we have four factions, we didn't see a ton of the other two factions, but also within the Civil War factions. I mean, I thought I was doing something incredible with double heavies, but there was a lot more heavies there than I expected.
The bid part actually shocked me.
The bid part, you know, I think some of that does have to do with table confidence. I know I preach taking a bigger bid if I don't know what the tables are going to look like, but I know we've always been very open with what we're bringing literally to the table in this case. Mm-hmm. So maybe that was part of it. And I mean, it helps that you don't have the KP monster like we did for a while there. So, I mean, maybe that was a factor too. What were you going to say?
Sorry.
What were you going to say, Zach? What were you going to say, Zach?
That's okay. Derailed the whole podcast. Don't worry about it, buddy.
No,
he's new. He only writes
kid,
for us.
Okay. Wants muffins at 8 o'clock at night, and I have my parents watching him. They're like, "Can we give him muffins?" And I'm like, "No." So to get back on the bid part, yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the tables. And so I brought clones, and I brought a bid just because I'm eight activations. I want a little bit more control. But the lower bids for like lists that would even be more beneficial as blue was really crazy to me, even without knowing the maps. But I guess people just fell back to what they felt comfortable with. And I think we're in a weird spot in the game right now where, and I think they've talked about this on Scoundrels, you either take like a 7-point bid or you don't take like a bid. Maybe you take like a two bid, maybe take like a two bid for another, another person playing like an 800 list. So you can like maybe have like a little bit of flexibility there, but there's like no in between that really makes sense. And what's funny is that we've had a lot of conversations, and by we, I mean like the Fifth Trooper Network, you know, we've talked about a bidding high quite a bit, and we thought bids were going to be pretty high going into LVO. And we were honestly shocked to see it being like an average of like 3.62 or something like that. Sorry, even lower, 3.37. So, I mean, that's just really crazy with how the meta is. But I get it. People fell back to what they felt comfortable with, which is maybe, you know what, all right, I'm going to add that extra thing of Hunter and I'm going to add Tenacity to this or something like that, where maybe they were cutting it for a bid leading up to LVO, but going into LVO, they were like, I'm going to take it anyways.
Oh, Zach, you bid eight like I did, right? So we actually, so we actually doubled the average bid, and then I showed up, and all my opponents were like, "Oh, $799, $800, $800, $799." Yeah. Well, I guess I just wasted
Hunter upgrade. It's really interesting, and Mike and I have talked, even more so than in the Fifth Trooper group, about bidding in excess, but it's just crazy that 3.37 was the bid average. Just wild.
Yeah. And so there's other like kind of things that indicate the competitive too. So like, I think this was right on where we thought it would be, but activation count average was around 9.7. The most activation counts was 10 activations, had 39 lists had 10 activations, 26 had 11 activations. And then 12 activations was at 4. But then what really surprised me was 8 and 9 were way up higher than I thought they were going to be. So 8 was 22 and 9 was 25. 10 definitely was the winner with 39. So it was around 10 activation average, which is good. But I was really surprised at how many 8 and 9s there were.
Yeah, it doesn't really surprise me just because I know with the newer factions, they generally tend to stick closer to that number. The droids, Double the Fall was overrepresented in the droid department. That really surprised me and honestly made me happy because you guys, probably know that that's a list I love to rock. And with the clones, they generally have the same thing where, they tried to stick to that 8-9 number. And I think Obi-Rex is a very good archetype that you're going to see out there a lot. So it did surprise me to see those numbers go up. I think I probably was surprised by the frequency in which they did show, but that tracked with kind of what I was expecting personally. There was a lot of stats that came out that, didn't actually surprise me, but if anything, I was pleasantly surprised rather than the opposite, like to see the vehicles last year. I mean, the vehicle selection was obviously different, but like as far as Imperial vehicles go, last year we had 3 AT-STs in 62 people. And I mean, that was it. And there was like 2 T-47s.
I believe we
and then we
15
went up to like
this year.
What, as far as vehicles
no,
go,
ATS,
we were in the 30s.
No, AT-STs this year.
Oh, AT-STs. Yeah. So, I mean, there were so many good changes that surprised me like that. Which was nice to see.
So speaking of LJ, if you had to guess the top 4 support and heavy units, what were they? What was number 1? Do you think?
In support,
and heavy. Yeah.
I mean, in this order, it'd be TONS, ATRTs, ATSTs, and then occupiers.
Okay, so you were close, but there's a huge surprise, and I want to think that this was because of me.
Oh God! Are you gonna say Ewok?
Tauntaun Riders number 1, AT-RTs number 2, coming in at number 3, E-Web heavy blasters, 17 units of E-Webs in LVO, and then AT-ST came in 4th, and then surprisingly speeder bikes after that. But yeah, I mean, we had two E-Webs in the top 8, which who called that? Boom, I did.
You know what? You made so many bold predictions. You had to get one of them right.
It was a whole podcast of bold predictions.
And you know what's really funny about that is, we do deck checks, Brendan and myself. We do try to make sure that people brought what they submitted. And we were looking at that top 8 data on Sunday, and we were like, why is there so many E-Webs in here? it surprised both of us. And yes, it does pleasantly surprise me. That's another stat that's nice to see because the little E-Web, should get some love. It was in a bad place at first. And with the generators going down and other things, appearing, it makes a lot of sense to throw in. And I was happy to see it.
Well, and Yeah. And, I've been a proponent of these guys since last LVO, and because what they provide is good firepower for minimal points. It's 55 points, so you're like, all right, if you kill that E-Web, I don't care. You know what I mean? I'll be okay point-wise from an MOV at the end of the game. And they just lay down a ton of damage, and people are genuinely frightened of them when you put them on the board, and they will literally focus down on them while the rest of your army does whatever it wants.
I'm not going to lie. I like live, breathe, and like sleep. But then it's Legion after that. I don't even know what the EWEB throws for dice.
You son of a gun. Are you kidding me?
No, I have no idea.
Fired. Yeah, he said that just to mess with you.
Yes. Go ahead. Guess. Try to take a guess.
Geez, is it two black, two white, and a red maybe?
Yeah, it's almost, yes, that's exactly. It's almost triple rainbow.
Did you just,
oh, so I did. I nailed
or
it.
Double rainbow, sorry.
You just set yourself up to look smart.
No, honestly, I had no idea. Every time it goes on the table, I'm like, is that 4 health or 5 health? I can't remember. And I'm like, wait a minute, what does it throw for dice? I swear to God, I had no idea what it was. I just took a random guess. I was like, I think it has
all
a
right.
red. I think it has a red in there, but.
We've had enough. Okay.
I don't want to talk to you, Ebs. I don't know.
So some of the other numbers we saw was, I don't think any of these are surprising, but on the Rebel hero count, you know, Leia was the number one hero the Rebels took, followed up by Sabine, which was the big shocker. I thought for sure it would have been Luke, but Luke, Chewie, and Han all were equal at nine counts of each one of those, which is, that's crazy to me. But okay, you know, that's cool. And then on the Imperial side, I think a little surprising, but you know, you had Veers at number one with 27, Krennic at number two with 18, and then Bossk following up with 10. I thought you would see more Krennic than Veers, but with all, it doesn't surprise me with all the vehicles having Veers, be the commander for those.
Yeah, I didn't expect Veers to have nine more than Krennic. I thought it'd be closer to two or three if they were going to top one another.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really strange. And Veers actually being the most played hero of all the factions, with Leia coming in a few after him, and then Krennic, and then Sabine. So that it was really interesting mix up there. You know, I think on the other side, on the core trooper count, no big surprise there. The number one core trooper that was taken was Rebels, followed by Shores, followed by the Mortars, and then Stormtroopers. I think that's about right.
Yeah, that pretty much tracks with, I think, what people were expecting. I know one of the big quote-unquote surprises was that AT-RTs were so much closer to Tauntauns than people thought. But, you know, they've been on people's radars for a while, and a lot of people, I think, wanted to try and, you know, see them and get it out of their system, as it were, because they knew Tauntauns were good. It's like, okay, what's the point when you know they're great? Not everybody is in it to take the top spot on Sunday. So I think it was good because you saw a lot of people test stuff at LVO they might have not done otherwise if we were already at Worlds.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, so then the top upgrades, no surprise here, the T-21B Trooper, you know, and comms relay came in one and two. Those are, yep, shorelines, right? Like, we saw a bunch of those. The it looks like the Imperial Sniper was next at number three, and then Recon Intel coming in at number four, followed up by Tenacity. I think that all tracks with the meta. None of that was incredibly surprising.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's actually funny. Would you have said a year ago you would have seen 41 targeting scopes?
No. And then frag grenades, like, almost in last place for
17 frags,
like,
yeah. It's just crazy.
Yeah. Talk about targeting scopes making a comeback. Yeah. That's crazy.
I mean, the points drop helped them. And then obviously, as we've seen, you know, aimed shores and targeting scopes are pretty lethal.
Yeah.
So is Bossk.
So yeah. Yeah. Speaking of Bossk and being pretty lethal, this gives me a great segue into talking to Mike. So, Mike, you made it to the top eight.
I did.
What was that like? So kind of describe to people out there in podcast land, going from Heat 1, going 4-0, and then heading into the top eight on Sunday. Like, where was your mind at? How were you feeling?
I was feeling pretty tired. World champ and I were out pretty late, so I was tired. But I was nice and focused by the time we got there. You kind of just go in there knowing that this is, like, that's the reason that I went to the tournament, was to try and make day two and get a real showing in for Worlds and get some practice. So to feel like I had at least accomplished my goal was successful, and everything I did from there was gravy. But I will say the games in the top eight were super tense between players. I don't want to say that they were negative, but both the tables next to me had some intense discussions whether it was rules related, time related, gameplay related, and you could really feel the intensity level of the games ratchet up another notch. And it went away from having that, hey, we're just here to have fun, to I'm here to win, and I know you're here to win, and no one's going to let any BS go by. And it's a little bit of a shock, because I didn't, when I got to the top cut at Northeast Open, it was a little bit more laid back, the tournament, because it wasn't a major. There was no invites on the line. It was more about just getting together and getting prizes and having fun. At Nova, I actually ran into a guy that was quasi-local to me, so I played him. It was a little bit more laid back, and then I ran into Orchimedes, so it was another not as intense game personality-wise. But when we got here to LVO and it was the top of 128 people, it was a little bit of a culture shock or an awakening for me of never being in a major tournament, and it got kind of bloodthirsty quick.
Yeah, and I don't think, and like Mike said, I don't know that that's necessarily in a negative way. It's just that next level of competition that, you know, it's just not as much like, oh, ha, 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 yeah, roll the dice, like laughing and stuff. I think everybody's like focused down and they're like, no, we're going to do this, you know, to win it.
Yeah, I don't want to say it was a bad thing, but if you've never made top cut at a major event before, do not expect to go in there buddy-buddy with players. Like, you're going to have to stand your ground at an uncomfortable point at some point, because both players are there to claim a victory, and that means that one person has to lose.
Yeah, and go home at that point, right? Like, you're
Yeah, I mean, I lost round one, and I was done. I was like, well, cool, now I've got like 16 hours to kill until my flight. What am I going to do?
Yeah, I hate taking games away from people, but it was so much better doing the single elimination on Sunday from the organizer standpoint, so I appreciate you putting up with that.
Oh, I'm so glad you did it, because once I lost, I had no desire to go play another game.
Right, and that's usually the thing, right? It is kind of hard to continue on when you know that you're not playing for anything at that point in the top eight situation. And it was kind of nice because it allowed us to, you know, tear stuff down and put together, you know, a nice looking final table.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of, to pull on that thread a little bit more, you know, LJ, you were at Worlds last year with only eight people for the Worlds. All eight of those people are cool people, but I would suspect that it was a little tense at the tables, even with those eight cool people there.
You know, not really. And okay. That's like counter to the experience Mike had at LVO, but it's kind of true. I mean, Kyle and I are weird when we play each other. It's tactical, but we congratulate each other on small stuff when it goes the other person's way. And, you know, I had never met Gordon before in person, but we had talked, you know, time and time again. And even though there was an opening shot of the game that went very poorly for me, I still felt like, you know, we were very nice to each other and cordial, and there wasn't really that underlying tension. The game that actually had the most tension, I think, was mine and Eric's. And even that, I mean, we started the game by putting our faces in front of the camera while it was still our quote-unquote lunchtime, I think it was, or the downtime, and taking a selfie with each other on camera before the game. So, I mean, I don't know that, and that might just be like a me thing and my relationship with those three people. But, you know, yes, like, I've had those moments of tension. It happened at High Command especially, where that final game mattered because you were either making it to the next day or you were done. But it was, Worlds was just such a weird, it was like going to Wonka's Chocolate Factory. I mean, and I said that to Jimmy on the car ride over from the airport. I feel like, you know, he's going to start playing that song that they play in the tunnel. And then all the, like, you know, all the creepy stuff starts showing up on the walls and everybody's like freaking out in Willy Wonka. It you know, we made that joke and that comparison, but it was kind of true. We were all just happy to be there, I think. And we just, you know, the camaraderie was just kind of a different level than what I've experienced at other competitive events in the positive. In
yeah,
that
to
case.
Go off that, actually, this whole conversation, you know, taking it in from you and Mike's perspective, in being on the outside at LVO, I actually think a big part of it might be the unfamiliar, like the players being unfamiliar with each other. If you looked at all of the four games on the final day, most of those players are from like different sides of the, you know, of the continent, if I'm not mistaken, all of them were. So it's like, if you don't know someone and you've never talked to them before, I just think that there's going to be even more tension between the players. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm just saying, like, if you had played them before, or if you'd had a conversation with them before, or you knew of them, or, you know, you just somewhat met before, maybe the game's a little bit less tense, but, you know, a little more cordial. But in this case, I think the finals at LVO was a special case where I think everyone kind of just, you know, was on a different field.
Yeah, that's true. The game next to me was Long Island, Arizona. Mine was Philly, California. The one next to us was California and Canada. And the further side was Buffalo, California. So we were all apart.
Yeah. And that's what I'm, you know, in my head, I'm sitting here like, wait a minute. I think they're all in different spots. And I think that plays a bit into the narrative a little bit.
All right. Well, I don't know if you guys have anything else, but I think that kind of encapsulates LVO. LJ, I just wanted to congratulate you on another well-done event. You and Brendan knocked it out of the park again. And I think everyone else, Zach and all the other judges, Nima and Keegan and Davis and everyone else that helped judge and run that event, I think did a phenomenal job. And I just want to thank you for, because I know, you know, I think we out of all people know how much time commitment it is to put into things like that. And we highly appreciate it.
Yeah, that's the hardest thing at the end of an event like this is making sure you thank everybody and making sure everybody's taken care of that helped you out. So, you know, I do appreciate it. I hope that anybody that was listening that assisted in any small way, shape or form, whether it be, you know, from helping, you know, set up or tear it down or providing terrain or sponsoring a prize or, you know, doing a bounty or just showing up, you know, that's all extremely appreciated. And, you know, it was a great time and I genuinely enjoyed it. And, you know, I had talked to a couple of people and told them that I was thinking about maybe not doing LVO next year because of the impending life changes my wife and I have coming up here soon. But, you know, yep. I thanks. Okay, thank thanks. I think I'm,
you have no idea.
I think I'm going to have to do it though. I think I'm going to have to do 2021 again. I can't set it down yet, even if I might be a little busier next year.
Perfect. Well, I think you definitely got enough people, including our network here, that are more than willing to help and support you. So, you know, I'm sure if you put out the call of the Ron Burgundy call from the conch shell, we'll be there.
Yeah, I think next time,
as long as I get staff.
Yeah, I think next time I'm gonna judge and not play, or play and not judge, because both is a bit grueling. But it was just a great event all around, and I don't regret it one bit.
I regret losing to Nima.
I mean, to be fair, Nima is just a really great player. And I'm not saying that you're not a great player, because you are too. But
that's exactly what you're saying. You know, screw you, Jack. You're
fired. All right. Well, guys, I'm now a freelance writer for Legion. If you want to pick me up, just let me know.
But all right, Mike, you got anything before we sign off?
No, I've said my piece. Thanks for everything that you did, LJ and Zach, at the event. Yeah.
Well, and yeah, thanks everybody. And for everybody here at the Fifth Trooper, thanks for listening to the LVO wrap-up special. We'll talk to you later.
Join us next week for another edition of the Fifth Trooper podcast.
This has been a Fifth Trooper production.